Alan, it is Mr. Shannon with you on the program today.
Who?
Yeah.
What happened?
I've never called you Mr. Shannon.
I get called that a lot.
Oh, do you? What by five-year-olds?
Yeah, it's funny. I have friends that they pick the phone up and they, hey, hello, Mr. Shannon.
You have friends?
Two.
Thank you.
Out of country, actually.
out of which country?
Well,
Bob Ryan's going to join us today of the Boston Globe, and you know, with the basketball season's going to start in like today.
Well, the magic thing about talking to Bob is that for the last 20 so years, everything happens in Boston. Everything's happening.
Well, they
win
all the time, so they are the focal point. And so, well, the Patriots aren't winning. What do you think of the Bruins?
There's still a story, though. There's still a story.
They are a story. What do you suspect of the Bruins? Are they got any chance to contend?
Oh yeah, I think they're better than the Leafs.
Well, that may or may not be saying anything.
I think in the end we're going to be talking about the Leafs and the Bruins fighting for number three spot in that division behind the two Florida teams.
Well, I don't know where we're going to go with Mr. Ryan, but I do know that at some point in time during the conversation, we're going to try and get to the NBA season and who does he like and who doesn't he like and what does he think of the Kyrie situation? What does he think of the Simmons situation? What does he think of the geezers in Los Angeles that the Lakers are going to run with? There's lots of questions, and we'll see if he's got any answers. Bob Ryan, when we come back after these messages. McCowan, Shannon, back with you, and our friend Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe joins us from Beantown, as they say. Are you offended by the phrase Beantown? Is there something offensive about it?
No, but the fact is it's highly anachronistic now. It really isn't, you know, anybody growing up, but I think anybody born around here, and I'm a transplant, as you know, but anybody born around here from, say, 1960 on, it's something they read about in the history books. Nobody refers to this as Beantown.
Boston baked beans, baby.
Yeah, I know. I like them, by the way. That's our generation. We thinks of Boston as a Beantown, but nobody knew.
I think the better nickname now is the Hub. Don't you? It's the Hub.
We like that. That's sports hub. You know, 21st century. It's been a very nice to us. Very, very nice. And it continues to be nice based on what's going on at Fenway Park.
Well, I was going to ask you that question. If you live in Boston, you know, how do you refer to yourself? How do you refer to your city?
And I try to preach the gospel that we're the luckiest city in all of North America based on what's happened in the 21st century. You shouldn't get greedy in any way. Sure. We've had such great fortune and we're the only city that has won championships in all four major sports, which we didn't had it happen in a 7-year span. We'll talk about that. So that alone, you know, but we've got the most championships. We're still ahead of LA in that regard. And that's only if LA can count Anaheim, which they shouldn't be allowed to. That'd be like Toronto counting Hamilton. So, we can't do that.
I don't know how we'd add Hamilton's list onto Toronto's list, but it would still only come
only,
up with.
Only, only like for the Grey Cup. Only for the Grey Cup. Yeah.
But I'm just saying, Anaheim is a distinctly different market than LA. Ask anybody who lives in either one of them. And they get to count the Angels who won in 2002. I object to that. And also the Ducks. So I object to that.
Well,
we're very fortunate, Bob.
Yeah, all you got to do is drive once from Anaheim to Los Angeles to find out it's they're not exactly. They are next door, but they're a long way away from each other. We want to talk about basketball because the NBA season is about to commence. But a few other things before we get going. How shocked are you that the way the Red Sox have performed?
I'm not completely, but about 85.5% to complete because there's nothing that indicated at the near the end of the season that this transformation would take place. They were a word that was used in more than one game story on certain of their performances in September was listless. okay? And they were embarrassingly bad when they were swept by the Yankees at that series the week before the season ended.
Yep.
Then they opened up the playoffs by being shut out by the Tampa Bay and one of those listless performances. And they've won six in a row since. And they've been dynamic and not just on offense. In a fitting coda last night, the game ends with a great defensive play you don't really need in a 12-3 game with two outs and nobody on in the ninth inning. But let the record show that Hunter Renfro made a spectacular catch to end the game.
Sure did.
You know, and it was just, this is like creepy. It's scary. They're not this good. Nobody's this good. Not when you lead 9-0 in two successive playoff games by the second inning. That's not normal. So, you know, just people should have to take a deep breath. But the fact is that everything is falling into place very nicely. And one thing they have is a manager that has proven now conclusively he knows what he's doing.
Well, one of the things,
Bob, but the one thing, Bob, I would ask is that over the years with the Red Sox, there's always that core of leaders on the team. Other than Alex Cora, who would you suggest are the leaders of the players on this team?
The key component, not the key, but a key person, and not that he's, it's just he's brought sunshine, he's brought in a spirit. Kyle Schwarber, that's been a multifaceted coup by Chaim Bloom, their GM. In addition to the big bat that he swung, and the flexibility he's given the lineup, because he taught himself a new position on the fly in the middle of a pennant race. He wasn't a first baseman his whole life. Is his positive attitude and sunshine personality. They've got some other guys with, you know, but I think they really played off of him in that regard. There isn't anybody quite the equivalent of what Millar was in the day and he was something like that, but he's not that kind of an aggressive personality, but because Millar is very proactive, but I think that he's brought a real spirit and fun. And of course, what Kike is doing now is historic. Right. It's frankly historic, and he has a sunny personality as well. So they're a happy bunch. Apparently, they got a song thing going on. They got a song they've adopted that they've played, rallied around. You know, when you hear these things in sports, they happen on occasion. When they do, it makes life really fun for everybody.
Well, you talked about the run that they're on, and it came after that that series sweep by the Yankees in the series right before the final weekend of the season. But in baseball, more than any other sport, I think, and I suspect you do too, you can get hot. Almost any team, regardless of talent, can get hot for a period of time. And the question is, how long can you, you maintain it, right?
You know, people lost to history, except in the city where it happened. In 2007, no team was hotter than the Colorado Rockies.
Mm-hmm.
And they got in the World Series and the Red Sox swept them. You know, I mean.
Exactly.
So this two, now the Red Sox are up 3-0. We only know, we know the history there. There's only one team's ever come back from 3-0. We know who it is. So we know it is possible, you know. And I mean, we know it's possible. You don't see, and don't forget that they got to be 3-0 by being beaten 19-8. In game three in 2004. So here we go. Talk about history repeating itself. Gee, what was the score last night? 12-3 and for game three. And they left them in tatters, you know. Well, we'll see. You know, the old story about the starting pitching. Well, that's the other thing. Is one big difference, though. If you're Dusty Baker, you're scrambling desperately to get a start of pitching. Mm-hmm. And the Red Sox are set up. Pivetta's ready to go. Eovaldi will be ready to go if there is a tomorrow. You know, they're in by their standards, they're in reasonably, you know, very good. And they got Sale, whatever you think of Sale at this point, they got Sale available, ready to go down the road too. So they're in much better shape. It's just, there's nothing to prevent them. You figure from getting this accomplished and getting to the series.
Not much. I don't know what to think of the Dodgers Braves series, both close games. You know, Atlanta wins at home. Doesn't preclude the Dodgers from coming back in any way, do you think?
No, not from going back home. 2-0, it's been done 2-0. They're going back home. Certainly, like there wasn't any kind of butt kicking going on there. We've had two walk-off wins. The big question that surrounded people is, okay, if you got a 20-game winner, maybe you ought to start them instead of waiting until the eighth inning to do them. But and I'm a big Dave Roberts guy. I love the guy personally very much. I think you can question that move, but there's not that much to pick between the two based on what's happened on the field. The Braves have had the last at bat and they won it twice. And that doesn't mean the Dodgers are out of it by any means. No, I would have a healthy respect for the Dodgers until I see otherwise.
Everything that went on the West Coast with the Giants and the Dodgers and then the American League East, which obviously we're all fascinated and focused on. The Braves are almost an afterthought, though. The Braves are one of those teams that are just there and don't get any near credit that they deserve, do they?
No, of course not. That's a very comfortable position for them to be in, too, you know, for that reason. Teams love to embrace the underdog thing. And the whole thing, when people were handicapping the entire postseason, there's no question that the Braves Milwaukee series was the undercard, you know, the mm-hmm. JV game, if what people thought, you know, nobody cared outside of those two cities and they weren't, no attention was paid. And now you have to pay attention to the Braves and I think they're embracing this and they've got some, you know, they got some, I still can't believe that they've done what they've done with their Hall of Fame to be player having struck out at 1.7 times in a row with Freddie Freeman, and they're doing it despite Freddie Freeman's lack of production. And he'll, you know, that being the case, I expect Freddie to break out before it's over. But you're right about them, and they're in a comfortable position in their mind.
I don't want to get too deep into this, but I'm intrigued by your thoughts on bullpen days, which have become common now. I mean, 10 years ago, Tampa started doing it. And maybe they did it out of an emergency situation and it worked out for them. But now every team is doing it, it seems. But when you do it in a World Series, I mean, I just shake my head. I don't know about you. I just don't understand it.
Well, it's the game. You're right. Tampa Bay did start it, and it was out of necessity, as I recall.
It was
a desperation move, and it happened to work. And people then try to turn it into a positive, you know, and think this is the way to go. I'd like to think that what people would like to do is have solid five-man rotations, in which this would be all unnecessary. But apparently not enough teams feel they can get to that point, and they do it. It's the way the game is played. It's just like with the shifting, you know. I mean, you see things that happen because of the shift. But the game is different. We have to acknowledge it. The game is different. There was a romanticism attached to the starting pitcher. There was a romanticism attached. We revere Jack Morris trooping out there in the 10th inning in 1991. You know, that's living. It's like reading about King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table now, you know, that actually happened in our lifetime, you know, but it did. I go back, Bob and John, to 2005. I was present for the White Sox winning a series against the Angels with four consecutive complete games. I mean, that's not all that long ago. We had flush toilets. We had color TV, you know. You know.
You might have, you know.
But, I mean, that's 2005. As recently as that, we had that phenomenon. And now look at I've postulated this before the playoffs started. Would we see even one starting pitcher in either league in the postseason take to the mound for a seventh inning? And so far, there's been one, I believe. Forget exactly who it was, but I think there's been one that's taken him out for a seventh inning, a starting pitcher. Okay. Six is the new absolute norm. At the most you ask him, any of them. So anyway, back you, Bobby, with your question. I don't like it because I'm the baseball purist and romanticist, and I wish it weren't. I wish they weren't doing that. No, it just feels wrong.
Well, again, I think there are two points to this. I think you acknowledge this, that there are moments of necessity where managers have to do it, partly because of the way rosters are constructed now, partly because they don't want them to face the same lineup a third time in a day.
Famous third time thing, right.
Yeah, so, I mean, there are moments where
That's another matter.
Well, it's moments when it's a necessity.
Yeah.
But I just thought with the Dodgers situation the other night, it was a decision of that was made in advance, not out of necessity, but out of preference.
Well, here's what we don't know. And you know, a lot of people make the automatic assumption that this wasn't Dave Roberts' idea. It was Andrew Friedman's idea. You know, that managers too many managers at times are not in control of their own situation. Right. You're analytics driven, the nerds prevail, revenge of the nerds over the gut of the manager. That could it be that Dave Roberts was told by Friedman to do this? We'll never know, but people have a right to think about it.
Yeah. Well, quickly, before we move on to other things, I watched the Arizona Cardinals for the first time beginning to end on this past Sunday.
That's only because they played the Browns.
That's only because they played the Browns, who are my team, of course. And they demolished them.
Yeah.
I was skeptical, to say the least, of how good this team was. Did anybody think it was possible this team is this good? Because I think they are.
I think it's growing acknowledgement that they are this good. They knocked on the. They started turning it around to a degree a couple of years ago. They were based on defense, and now that Kyler Murray has emerged to be the threat that he is, and once they were able to pick up Hopkins I think you very much should take them for real. I think I'm not anointing them as the obvious favorite, but I think that they are certainly going to be the proverbial tough out. In the playoffs, at least. No, I do. And you can't overpraise Murray either. You know, he's a wonderful phenomenon. He really is.
It's really a great story. When you look at Murray and you look at Jackson in Baltimore, two great athletes at quarterback. I mean, it's not just a drop back and throw the ball guy. It's, they can do absolutely. They must be the two best athletes in the league. Well, really.
Jackson, particularly at the size, that the thing he brings to it, we've had, we're in an era now, we're getting these running quarterbacks, we're getting guys who are the mobile quarterback, I should say, and guys who can help win games with their feet, salvage broken plays, et cetera, even to the point, and even having planned running plays. We understand that. But I submit that there's never been anybody like Jackson because of the power aspect of it. He truly is a running back when he tucks that ball under his arm. More than any quarterback that I've ever seen, he becomes a running back. He can bowl over tacklers. Maybe we have to go back to the antecedent. Randall Cunningham may have been the great grandfather of all this.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He was a big guy, but even though, did he generate the sheer power that Jackson can? I don't know. Jackson is astonishing. Oh. And his, by the way, that team, that game the other night, he didn't put up monster numbers in any way. He didn't, but he was in total command, and they, I think they're a major force right now. They may be the best team in the AFC right now.
Well, if I was a general manager, I don't know about you, in the National Football League, I'd have a really difficult time looking at a traditional drop back quarterback who doesn't have that innate ability to generate that other form of offense. I'd have a hard time, no matter how good he is, I'd have a hard time deciding whether to draft him or not.
Well, I mean, the only thing is, if you can ascertain pocket presence, so a guy doesn't.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Mr. Brady is 44. He still has that pocket presence. He doesn't scramble, but he can move within, he can move back there as much as he needs to. The Mac Jones right now he's not going to be running for too many first downs, but he seems to have that ability, to move in appropriately in the pocket. You need that. The statue quarterback is extinct, I think. I think almost all of them, if you're going to have any success, you're going to have that at least to have that pocket presence kind of thing. But they're all over the place. That Justin Fields could be, who knows what he's going to turn into. He's got that attribute,
Yeah.
He needs some help in Chicago. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Of course. But he does fit the mold.
Yeah, he does.
You touched on Mac Jones. Are the Patriot fans going to be patient with the rebuild?
I so far so good. Surprisingly, I mean, even though they're 0-3 at home, there were some questions. They're calling on Bill to let Mac loose a little bit in terms of going for it. There was a couple of situations on Sunday when clearly, including the overtime, was 4th-and-3 at the and he wouldn't go for it. And you know, with the way that defense was, they hadn't stopped them. And of course they didn't. I was like kiddingly said, but true, they only took one play in the overtime to lose the game after they turned the ball back over and gave them the ball back. And there's some saying in Bill We Trust has been eroded a little bit in terms of his decisions on the field right now this year, and let Mac go. The other question is, they got, turns out that young Belichick is apparently running the defense, and that is, it's, you know, he's not getting high marks other than the fact he makes amazing faces. I don't know if you've seen Steve Belichick.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's, the memes are out there. I mean, he's hilarious to watch. But anyway, people are surprisingly sanguine at the, I don't know if they've, what it's going to take, you know, but it'd be nice to get a home win.
Well,
I got the Jets next. So let's put it this way. See me after that. If they don't beat the Jets, see me, then I think we not pray that than the deluge.
Well, I'm wondering if you think that, I mean, is there an anti-Brady sentiment in New England, or is there a tremendous still everlasting respect?
I think there are some people, you know, that are angry that he left, but in terms of, remember last year, the ratings were second only to, you know, for Tampa games, second only to Tampa. They made sure all the games were on here. People are still always think finally of Brady for the most part. Oh, and not every, you know, I mean, he's his own personal life situation. You know, you can make fun of the TB12. You can make fun of the, the peculiar lifestyle, shall we say. But the fact is, in terms of football, he's still revered and will always be.
No, and I only ask this, Bob, because I wonder how it impacts the perception of Jones and what he has accomplished. I mean, because there's an inevitable comparison to be made, and it's an unfair comparison, of course.
I'm happy that it doesn't appear to have been a big deal yet. I think people understand. I really do. I'm pleasantly, you know, gratified, should I say, that most people seem to understand not to try to make him into the next Brady. But, you know, and the fact that he is the style of quarterback that he does would have made it more likely people would look at it that way, because he's not a scrambling. He's not, you know, he is more of a traditional quarterback, as I say, who has these pocket presence things. But no, I think people are giving him some benefit of the doubt. I really do.
And with his pedigree from Alabama, I mean, let's face it, that probably buys him a year or two, don't you think?
Well, yeah, well, that too, but people like what they see, you know, and they read the praise he's getting. Seems like every week the opposing coach is saying nice things about him, you know, and so
true
as well, you know, and the run-up. So I think, you know, if you're digesting that, you feel we got something, you know, we got a keeper here. And I think people feel that way.
The NBA season is about to commence. That's one of the primary reasons why we asked Mr. Ryan to join us. And I know he's been working on that. We'll take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll address what do we expect to happen during this basketball season. Back after these messages. It's McCowan, it's Shannon, and it's Bob Ryan in Boston joining us. Well, I was about to say that usually the defending NBA champion is given high stature and expectation for the following year, except when there's unusual circumstance like a free agent player, a key player leaves. Is Milwaukee being insulted by the fact that I see very few people that think they can do it twice?
Yes. I would say that this is true. They're not the first word that leaps off when people think about who's going to win the championship. Last year was an odd year. We know that. And they won a circumstance in a 60 game season, and then in the bubble and the playoffs, and so many of the dynamics that are present in each and every playoffs were missing last year because of the unique circumstance. We all know that. And they happened to be and then they went up against an opponent that didn't strike fear in anyone's heart or you know, the whole thing was different. Now, so they're going to have motivation, you know, to show the world, hey, we're everybody as good as our as that champion. We deserve that championship. The one thing we learned technically last year during those was that Giannis, after 2 years of having run up against the wall, remember the wall business, we didn't hear about that last year. He was scoring 50 points in a game and calibrating his game to figure out how best to utilize his great skill. He figured something out last year and took himself to that proverbial next level. I think they're going to be, they're a serious contender. Let's face it. We know that the two big storylines per teams in the league are the bi-coast, one on either coast. You know, you got the Brooklyn situation, which is exacerbated by the Kyrie situation, which obviously we're going to have to get to. And then we got the Lakers out there, the AARP special team, you know, that let's face it. In the history of the league, no team has ever stacked it with so many aging players of consequence. And they're going to have to hope when April and May come that they're going to be healthy enough to be what they can. But they're a lab experiment team, let's face it. And then within that, two things. One, how will Russell Westbrook fit in, ball dominant that he is, with LeBron? And B, LeBron himself, who turns 37 on the 30th of this year, you know, and how long can it continue at the level of being the best all-around player in the world, which he still is, and in my opinion. So there's lots of questions about them. The potential is enormous, and but can it execute? I mean, it's so those are the two big team questions, but then I think of all.
Well, in my mind, you know, you mentioned the Westbrook situation. He has to defer and to at least some extent, and his history of deferring when he's playing with someone of that stature hasn't worked out very well, has it?
No, and now he's playing with the ultimate, you know, the GOAT or the
current GOAT at the very least.
1A, you know, if you're a Michael guy, he's, you know. But let's face it, you're playing with LeBron. You're playing with the great LeBron. And let's see how he does react. I'm curious. I agree. You're right. Anybody's right to be skeptical that he's going to adapt, you know, the way, by the way, that Harden adapted last year and fooled the hell out of me, among others, by
you and me both
distributing that ball and doing what he did. And it's one reason why I think they're going to be formidable with or without Kyrie. And because he did make that accommodation that he needed to make. Whether Westbrook's capable of that, we'll see. But I think you're right to be skeptical. I'm not positive he's going to do it.
Well, we talked about deference here, you know, and the New Jersey situation is intriguing to me because Kyrie is another one of those guys who doesn't. Well, I was going to say he doesn't play nice in the sandbox with the other kids, but he never has. We don't question his skill and his talent, but as a teammate, he can be a disaster. And I wonder if I'm a member of the Brooklyn team right now, am I happy that he's not around? Do I hope he doesn't show up?
Boy, wouldn't you love to know? No, wouldn't you love to get those guys out for a beer? And no, seriously, because nobody's going to say anything, obviously.
No.
But I wonder too, because we learned about, you know, we're witnesses to having him and the negative effect he had on the three young guys, on Tatum, Brown, and Smart at the time.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, there was a negative effect on them. And he's a unique person, frankly, you know, and fine. Oh, I don't know. I think they can win without him. I think they're good enough.
I do too.
I think that Harden proved that he knows how to play with Durant. Durant's still at the peak of his powers. Mm-hmm. Patty Mills is not a star, but he's going to be a perfectly serviceable point guard for them. Anyway, it's a great dynamic. And remember, this whole thing came about ultimately that he's there only because Durant wanted him. You know, right. They're supposed to be buddy buddies, and I wonder what Durant's thinking now that his buddy is, you know, is gumming up the works the way he is.
Well, I'll go a step further than you, Mr. Ryan. I will say this: I'm confident, as you seem to be, that they can win without Kyrie. What I'm not confident of is whether they can win with Kyrie, in spite of his extraordinary skill.
Very good point. No, I might, because we've seen this. Ample evidence, you know, that he can be this a distracting, disruptive, whatever D word you want to use, force, personality. And the same of it is his game. He knows how to play this game. When the game starts, you know, he can play.
And oh, God, yeah.
He can get the basket at his size as well as anyone I've ever seen. He knows how to play. But you, I go all the way back to Cleveland. You know, I said this. He has never publicly, categorically stated why he left Cleveland. We know. We think we know. He wanted his own show somehow or other. You know, right. He didn't want to be in the shadow of LeBron. He thought he had made his contribution in there, and he wanted to. I mean, but he's never categorically said that at all. We all left it. We left to speculate, you know, and observe him from afar. Yeah.
Do you think Durant deserves gets enough credit for what he was? We saw him at the Olympics. We saw him drive the American team to the Olympics, and we know how great he can be.
He's an all-time elite player. I mean, he's in a discussion. He's a top 10 all-time player now, I think. You know, next to Bird and LeBron himself, I think he's the next great forward of all. You know, and Duncan, that'd be the next one up for me. You know, no, he's on that level. He's a phenomenal player and a clutch player. And an unguardable player because he does what he does. He can create space almost like Steph Curry to get his shot off at 7 feet. He's got extraordinary range. There's nothing he can't do offensively, and he can play defense when he wants to and needs to. He's an exceptional player.
You speak about Curry. Will the Warriors ever get back to that level again?
They're another a very curious team. They could be very good again. You know, now the question is, Klay Thompson has been out for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, is the muscle memory still there for the shot? You know, I mean, remember, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the full extent, how good, you know, Curry, I still think has another couple of good, you know, great years left in the tank. Green, though, is slipping yes. In terms of production. You know, his mouth isn't slipping, but his talents are eroding a bit. And that's another one. Weissman, we'll see what they get out of him. I don't know. They're a curious team, but I don't think they're going to be a major threat. No,
I
don't.
Well, I think we all fall guilty to the same thing. We're trying to evaluate what Golden State can be, but Durant isn't there anymore. Oh. I mean, you know, Toronto fans would never want to admit this and will never even discuss this. But if Durant is healthy for that NBA final 2 years ago or 3 years ago, whenever the hell it was, do the Toronto Raptors still win? I don't think so.
Well, I'll say this.
You never know, but.
You can go back literally 60 plus years. I can cite you chapter and verse. Injury in the final and the playoffs, it's a factor always. And not always, so many times, you know. I mean, the Celtics get another championship in 58 if Russell's not hurt, period. End of story. They win. Not 11 out of 13, 12 out of 13. I can go back and they don't win in 68 if Billy Cunningham doesn't get hurt. Philadelphia. Right. So I can go back into the 60s and we can go on and on and on and on. I can say, no, so I'm not going to take that away from Toronto at all. But, you know, the answer is probably not, but that's the way it goes.
Okay, you mentioned Philadelphia. Billy Cunningham a little different than Ben Simmons because at least Cunningham could shoot. What is going to happen? What is going to happen with Simmons and the Sixers?
It's a preposterous situation right now. I mean, because if you play him, he's not going to, I don't know. They right now he's back in practice. We don't know what he's done in practice. We don't know what their ultimate plan is. He still insists he doesn't want to be there. Do you want a guy around who's going to cause that kind of a gloom and gloom on a team? I don't know. I said this, guys, all offseason, my question was this. What is his market value? What is the market value for a specifically unique commodity in the entire history of this league? There has never been, I don't believe this, there's never been a player of this high consequence with such a flawed hole in his game resume, you know, a guy who's been in all-star games, has been all defensive team, but has this monumental flaw in his game with the outside shooting, which not only is an inability, but a refusal, as he turned out in the playoffs last year, who shoots 34% from the free throw line during the playoffs, and who you have to remove from the game, a la, you know, in the end of the game, and he's supposed to be your point guard. What's the market value for this? Well, the answer so far we find is not a whole hell of a lot.
Zero, yeah.
Daryl Morey was talking about apparently all-star player in return, draft picks, plural. Yeah, well, we're still waiting, aren't we, Daryl? I don't know what the market value is. The answer to your question is, who the hell knows? This is crazy. Now, I'm a friend of Doc Rivers. I just can't, you know, believe what's it's. He's got to be totally exasperated.
And well, you haven't mentioned the cumbersome contract either.
Oh yeah, and then we go back to how many. You wonder how many times. What have they that people have probably tried to implore him? You know, get in the gym, fix this, stop this. You got to believe it's happened countless times, and either he won't do it.
Well, I think, you know, I mean, look, what do we know? But that if I'm a general manager and I'm, you know, I look at the skill set of this player, but then I look at the hole in his game, as you put it, the flaw. And it's not so much that flaw that concerns me. It's the story that he refuses to address the flaw. And then, you know, goes through this offseason with, you know, and I don't know whether to blame the Sixers more than the player or the player more than the Sixers. Who started it? Who got mad at who? I don't know, you know, but that's another issue. When you've got two significant issues, regardless of the skill set of what he shows on the floor, I'm walking away. He just scares me.
Well, I know that they don't want to just give him away, even though I'm saying,
of course they don't.
I know, of course not. But I mean, they're going to have to accept a lot less on the dollar than they'd like. You know, it's just a question of how much less on the dollar they expect. You know, they're not going to get that all-star player in the third bad picks. That's the 100% in the dollar in this discussion. So how much less than that would they accept it? Is it going, they're going to have to come to that accommodation. One other thing we have to mention too, is that was even if he stays, supposedly he and Embiid don't get along.
Yeah.
That rupture hasn't been, you know, and it certainly isn't going to be helped by this circumstance now. It's a mess. I mean, it's just a complete mess for a team that is, you know, has a lot of other things going for it.
What kind of team trades for him?
That's what I want to know.
Do you think does it have to be a good team that's looking to add a piece to win a championship, or is it the more Lakers. Likely it's some
the
scrub?
Lakers. The Lakers will
no,
take
I
it.
Would
Come
say
on now.
I would guess it would be that kind of team, Bob. Theoretically, the team that thinks, okay, this, you know. However, I don't agree with them. I don't want them. I don't want them. You know, no. I don't want to live with that. I don't see how you know, because when you get okay, fine, it might be fine in October, November, December, you know, January, February, March. But when April and May come, we saw the consequence last year.
Yeah.
No.
Hey, Bob, as well as you know Doc Rivers, how do you think he's managing through this?
I think he's close to his, you know, the hair pull out, if he had hair to pull out stage. And, you know, it's got to be frustrating because other things, so many other things are going right. And you know, they're, no, it's, I don't know. I mean, I just don't know. No coach. I don't know what coach would be able to figure this out. I don't know. No, crazy. I mean, this is a situation. I mean, you just hang around long enough, you see everything. They say, well, I'm hanging around and you know, this is a new one on me.
Is there a team that you're looking at as maybe a surprise, a team
yeah,
that could
well,
elevate themselves?
Yeah, the team that I'm figuring could, if things fall into place the way they think and hope it might. Watch out for Miami.
I knew you were going to say Miami.
No, well, they got your guy, and he's got, you know, they got your guy.
Yep.
And they got Butler, who's a tough customer, and they got Bam, and they got a coach. By the way, this is Eric Spoelstra's 14th year. How about that?
Wow.
And, yeah. And I just saw that this morning. It just jumped out at me. That's the one I would target that, you know, didn't really do it. Like we saw Atlanta come on last year. Okay, that, you know, they're going to be, you know, somebody to, but we're aware of that. But in Indiana. Oh, also, they got Oladipo down in Miami now, too. Don't forget. And Tucker. That's PJ. They got PJ Tucker.
Right.
And yeah. That's a loss, by the way. That's a major. That's a big loss for Milwaukee. And I like, you know, you got to like what he does. So they got them. The other team, Indiana with Carlisle. We'll see how that affects anything. I'd be interested. I don't know. You know.
Yeah.
I don't know how that's going to be, because Sabonis came on. He had the most hidden great month ever last year. Nobody was paying it. Go look up what he did in the last month of the year last year, Domantas Sabonis. He was putting up monster numbers every night. I love him. I'm totally. I love the father. I love the son. I'm a total Sabonis family suck up. I admit to it. All right. So I love this kid. But go look at what, see what he did. And I'm very partial to Rick too. I know Rick's, you know, I know Rick's foibles, but I think he'll be a good immediate, you know, boost for that team. And so there's a couple teams.
Where do you think the Bulls are going to end up? I mean,
they were next to my list. They were next on my list, you know, and I don't know. They're intriguing. They got DeRozan now. LaVine is, you know, LaVine's a force. I don't know. And, you know, Billy's, you know, second year there. They're, you know, Markin is gone. I mean, I put them at another level. They could be a theoretical. They'll be contending for the eighth and, you know, the eighth spot, I guess, but I don't put them any higher than that. I think they'd be do very well to be doing that.
Quickly, you're not buying Phoenix's rise.
They're a commodity. No, they're a given. Now they do have an issue with Ayton.
Of course,
they do. I don't know how that's going to linger. I don't know how he's going to react. You know, but he's digging in. He thinks he should get the max, and they don't want to give him the max apparently, right? Yet he came on. I think he was personally, was a revelation in the playoffs that I didn't realize he had gotten this good. I know who he is. I know his background, but I didn't realize he had gotten this good. That guy was a force. And of course, Booker's, you know, he's off the charts. And can Paul keep doing it, you know, at this, you know, at the level?
At least getting them to the brink.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, Payne is a nice backup, but, you know, he had a couple great games, but then he fell off. No, it's Paul's got to keep doing it, but they got to resolve this Ayton thing. That could be the one, you know, hurdle there.
We've mentioned at least 10 NBA teams, and not one of them is the Raptors.
I think the Raptors, you know, they're off people's consciousness now. I just think they have to get back in. That's all. It's as simple as that. No, they're not. They had enjoy it, guys. You had it. It was there. But I think, let's face it, it's not likely to happen again in the near future.
It's a league where if you don't have stars, you don't nobody pays any attention to you. And right now the Raptors have some very good players, but I don't think any of the three veterans they've got would be considered like stars.
You know, I can't exit without mentioning the team in my backyard who are, you know, have some great young talent. Tatum, by the way, he's turned 24 this year. Doesn't it feel like he's been around for a while?
Wow. That's remarkable.
How about that? Huh? And he, we're looking for him to take another step up. You know, the Olympic experience was good, very good for him. And now they're going to start. Brown's missing. He might miss opening night as he exits COVID. And if he does play opening night on Wednesday, it's with no practice for 10 days, which I think find highly unlikely. They got an X factor, guys, and that is the coach. I always say you should be judicious with the use of the words always and never, right? But I have never in all these years encountered the circumstance where a rookie coach, never coached a single head coaching job in the NBA, is coming in lavished with such external praise. The league loves this guy. Everybody loves Ime Udoka, you know, and fine, you know, we want to see it, you know, but he is still, you know, how he's going to do is going to, you know, be interesting to see. But the Celtics, they're going to be in the 4-5 hunt. You know,
well, the last coach that came in with all that kind of praise was Brad Stevens, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Now, the difference was Stevens was completely coming in from college, whereas Ime Udoka's entire professional coaching experience is playing. He played in the league. People don't remember. You know, he played. He was a journeyman forward in Portland. And he's been around he's 43. He's been around as an assistant to build up a resume, you know, and he's got the ultimate thing you can have in basketball, the Greg Popovich imprimatur.
So I sense a little bit of
that. That's the papal blessing of basketball.
Before we let you go, Tim Leiwicki joined us yesterday. We had a fascinating conversation with him. Not entirely, but to some extent talking about the new arena that they built, his company built out in Seattle that got them the hockey team. Mm-hmm. And we had the conversation about, well, how long before the Sonics or mm-hmm. whatever go back to Seattle? That was a pretty good basketball town. It didn't have an arena and it didn't have a commitment long-term. They have that arena now. I haven't seen it, but apparently it's as good as there is out there. The NBA has room to expand. What do you think of the possibility of that happening very soon?
I believe that the biggest screw job in the history of the NBA was what happened to Buffalo, thanks to terrible ownership. There was nothing wrong with that franchise, okay? The mm-hmm. second biggest, 1A, is what Seattle. As soon as the McClintock bought the team, they were in trouble. You know,
yep.
The arena was the only reason that they lost that team. And the reason they didn't get the arena was apparently the taxpayers of King County. And you can't fault them. They already put up for the baseball stadium, they put up for the football stadium, and they just if the Sonics
have been able to
take care of their own business, you know, financially there, they would have kept, you know, that team. I think about it often. I think it was a total screw job. I think that, you know, Kevin Durant should have been doing all those things in Seattle. He could be should have been a lifer. And he started out there, people forget. And so anyway, I hope, I'm rooting for them to come back. And I love David Stern. I just thought he allowed that to happen. Maybe he could have done something, or maybe not. I'm wrong. But so I'm rooting for Seattle to get back into.
Well, if that happens, what would be the, I think it's got to be two cities to get them to 32.
Oh.
Any thoughts about the other city?
No, there's always Louisville, maybe. I don't know. That's trying to, I'm trying
hey, to. Guys, I think there's a city that had an NBA team, honestly, that has matured and has grown hugely in the last 10 years. And I think it's Vancouver.
I knew that was coming. How did I know that was coming? No.
Lucky guess. Lucky guess, Bob.
I'm all for that. God knows. I mean, if I were back on the road, I'd be very happy to hear that. So that'd be great. But I think so. But that's that same quadrant, you know, in the league, right, too, to create more interest. Well, I'm rooting for Mr. Lewicki. I'm rooting for Seattle to get back in. Those people deserve better than they got, the fans, Sonic fans.
Well, you know where I'm going to go with this. And I'd love to see Vancouver get a team. But the city that's adding franchises with the most consistency and expedience is Las Vegas. They want a basketball team. And they have more basketball history in Las Vegas than football or baseball or hockey. Certainly,
I'd tell you to bite a towel there, Bob. I'd tell you.
That would be interesting if it happened. I mean, you know, suddenly they've gone from nowhere to suddenly they got two things going, and that would, can they handle another one? I don't know, but maybe
but it's basketball.
I know. Like, there's a lot of basketball activity there now. I mean, you know, all kinds of off season stuff, and oh yeah, no, it's, and of course they got the legacy of the Tark days. You know, they own that town. They were the franchise, you know. Now
they were.
Yeah.
I was there then, sitting in Gucci Row, as we used to call it. Mr. Ryan, time is our enemy. We thank you very much, as always.
Oh, that was fun, guys. Thanks for having me.
And we'll call on you down the road. All the best. Stay well. Talk to you soon. Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. We'll come back after these. McCowan and Shannon back with you. Whether you're watching on the podcast or listening to the podcast or listening on Sirius XM, our thanks to Bob Ryan, as always.
Okay, so we got Red Sox, Astros, Dodgers, Braves. Do you have a horse in the race?
Dodgers.
You do? Because of Caston?
No, Stan is a pal. You know, you've known that, and I've known Stan Caston since the days when he was with the Atlanta Braves. Interestingly enough, huh?
Yeah. Well, look who's with the Atlanta Braves now, though.
Well, the former general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Also a friend.
Masterful job.
Who I haven't talked to very often in the last couple of years. We should get Anthopoulos on.
He's
a lot harder to get on than...
The producer's already on that.
And then Caston. But that is intriguing.
But if you had to pick the four teams, it's the Dodgers.
Well... And I've told
because,
the story many
because
times
you played before. Because you played when you were 7 years old.
5 years
old.
Jersey. First organized sport I played was when I was 5 years old, maybe four. I played baseball And there were four teams in the league, and they gave me the jersey, and on it, it said Dodgers.
Yeah.
And like a year later, so I didn't know who the Dodgers were. I was a kid, but I did some homework. I found out, whoa, they're the Brooklyn Dodgers, and oh, they're this, that, blah, 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 blah. And like a year later, they screwed off and went to Los Angeles. I was heartbroken. I don't know why.
You'd never been to Brooklyn.
Never been to Brooklyn, never been to LA at that point. The only connection I had was my jersey said Dodgers.
Yeah.
So
I gotta tell you, I have really enjoyed the Red Sox. And it's not as much for the baseball. I just think those fans, and we talked about this last week after they beat Tampa. I just think the fans are so good. I love what the Red Sox fans, what they bring to the game. I love Fenway. I've always loved going to Fenway. I've got a soft spot right now, the way they're playing, for the Boston Red Sox to win.
I'll never have that.
I know.
I'll never like the Red Sox. I'll never like the Yankees. I think their fans are equally obnoxious. And I love those two cities.
Yes.
I came like that close to going to work in Boston. But it didn't happen. My own choice. But it's a great town.
Oh, yeah.
And a great, and it's the best sports town right now.
And I'll tell you what, they've done a masterful job with the landscape of the city when they did the big dig for $50 billion. And it's become so much more livable downtown Boston. It is a spectacular place. Spectacular.
By the way, I said it's the best sports town. I may stand corrected on that. I think right now Tampa probably takes that mantle in terms of championships. But
for two decades, Bob, two decades.
Of what, Boston?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I get it. But crazy. Right now, I mean, Tampa's king, you know.
Yeah, but that's why, it's one of the reasons why, I mean, the Red Sox supporters make the games fun.
Our thanks to Bob Ryan again for joining us. We'll come back with another unsuspecting victim tomorrow. For John Shannon, Bob Callum.